The Silver Peaks. Ever since my infancy, there was always a certain mountain peak in the background of my gaze. Only when I was 16 years old and discussed this with my friends, who responded, "You're crazy, where are the mountains?" did I realize that nobody else had mountains in their eyes. For some time, I thought I should locate that peak, but then I put the idea aside. Suppose there were a spot in your spectacles, you would get used to it after a while. It was just like that with my mountain peak. It was only much later when a flood of memory returned to me, and when I was looking for a place to establish the Dhyanalinga, that I began to search for the peak that had dominated my vision. I traveled everywhere. I made the 760-mile ride from Goa to Kanyakumari on the southernmost tip of India about 11 times. Along every road and mud track, I have probably ridden thousands of miles. Then just by chance, one day, many years later, I came upon a village outside Coimbatore. As I was driving around a bend, I saw the seventh hill of the Velangiri Mountains. There it was, the mountain that I had seen since my childhood. The moment I set my eyes upon that peak, one that had lived within me for my entire life, it vanished from my inner vision and became a living reality. Suddenly, I knew this would be the most conducive space for my life work. If you ask me which is the greatest mountain on the planet, I will always reply Velangiri. I was born with an imprint of these mountains in my eyes, and they have haunted me ever since. They lived within me and have been my very own navigating system, my inner radar. The mountains are not just a matter of geography for me, they are a reservoir of all that I needed to know to create the Dhyanalinga. The word Velangiri literally means silver mountain. This range is so named because the mountains are covered with cloud for a large part of the year. They are known as the Kailash of the South because Adiyogi or Shiva himself spent a little over 3 months upon these mountain peaks. When he came here, he was not in his usual blissful mood. According to the legend, he was angry with himself because he had failed to keep his word to one of his most ardent woman devotees. He was intense and despondent, and that energy is still evident today. It produced a string of yogis through the tradition who are of the angry sort. They did their spiritual practice here and acquired that quality. They were not angry about anything in particular. They were simply in a certain state of intensity. Above all, this mountain is very important for me because this is where my guru left his body. This mountain is like a temple, a living shrine. For us in the yogic tradition, a torrent of divinity, a cascade of grace. The way of the mystic. There is a great curiosity in certain circles about mystical experiences. Many claim to have had extraordinary paranormal experiences which they cite as proof of their spiritual evolution. A common word in people's spiritual lexicons nowadays is samadhi, which is seen as a certificate of mystical attainment. What is samadhi? It is a certain state of equanimity in which intellect goes beyond its normal function of discrimination. This, in turn, loosens one from one's physical body such that there is a space between you and your body. There are various types of samadhis, which for the sake of understanding have been classified into 8 types. Among these 8, there are 2 broad categories, savikalpa, Samadhis with attributes or qualities that are very pleasant, blissful, and ecstatic. And Nirvikalpa, samadhis that are beyond pleasant and unpleasant, without attributes or qualities. In the case of Nirvikalpa Samadhi, there is only a single-pointed contact with the body. The rest of the energy is loose, uninvolved in the physical. These states are maintained for certain periods to help practitioners establish the distinction between themselves and their bodies. Samadhi is a significant step in one's spiritual evolution, but it is still not the ultimate. Experiencing a certain type of samadhi does not mean you're released from the cycles of existence. It is just a new level of experience. When you were a child, you experienced life in a particular way. When you move into your adulthood, you have another level of experience. You experience the same things in a totally different way at different points in your life. Samadhis are just like this. Some people may go into a certain level of samadhi and stay there for years because it is enjoyable. In this condition, there is no space or time and no bodily problems because the physical and psychological barriers have been broken to some extent. But this is only temporary. The moment they come out of this state, all the bodily needs and mental habits return once again. Generally, compared to someone who is sober, someone who is slightly drunk has a different level of experience and exuberance, but everyone still has to come down at some point. All samadhis are a way of getting high without any external chemicals. If you go into these states, a new dimension does open up for you, but the crucial thing is that it does not leave you permanently transformed. You have not moved into another reality. Your level of experience has deepened, but you have not become free in an ultimate sense. Most enlightened beings never stayed in samadhi states. Gautama the Buddha never sat and meditated for years on end after his enlightenment. Many of his disciples went into very long meditations for years, but Gautama himself never did this because he must have seen it was not necessary for him. He practiced and experienced all the 8 kinds of samadhis before his enlightenment, and he discarded them. He said, "This is not it." He knew this was not going to take him to realization. Samadhi is just a heightened level of experience, a kind of inner LSD without external input, which causes altered levels of perception. The risk is that you could get caught up with it because it is far more beautiful than the current reality, but even the most beautiful experiences, as we know, can become a drag with time. If you have made realization the top priority in your life, then anything that does not take you one step closer towards your ultimate freedom is meaningless. Let us say you are climbing Mount Everest. You will not take one step sideways because every iota of energy is needed to reach the peak. Now, if you have to reach the peak of your consciousness, you need every iota of energy you can muster. And still it is not enough. Now, you would not want to perform any action that would distract you from the main purpose. What is this self-realization? You might wonder. After all that most people are looking for is health, well-being, wealth, love, and success. Do you really need self-realization? Let us look at this in the simplest possible way. Isn't it true that the more you know about your computer, the better you can use it? Isn't it true that your ability to use a device or an instrument is directly proportional to your knowledge about it? Isn't it true that someone with a high level of dexterity and expertise can use even a simple instrument in a seemingly magical way. Have you seen some people riding a piece of plastic that they call surfboard, doing incredible things? Just a piece of plastic, and what amazing feats of agility and grace they can perform. Similarly, the more profound your understanding of the human mechanism is, the more magical your life will be. In every culture, there have been a few people who performed certain actions that made others believe in miracles. All these actions that are known as miracles are just born of a more profound access to life that some have enjoyed. That access, as I have said time and again, is available to everyone who cares to look deeper.